राधा माधव कुंजबी हरी गोपी जन बलबा गिरिवर धारी गोपी जन बलबा गिरिवर धारी जन बलबा गिरिवर यशोधा नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यशोधा नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन जमुना चीरभन छारी जमुना चीरभन छारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी श्री राधा माधव की जय गंतराज श्रीमद्भागवतम की जय थाय गो प्रेमानंदी माँ विष्णु पदाय कृष्ण पृष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी नमने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पश्चात यदस्थरिणे वंशकावपत्रु वृषा कृपा सिंधुभिव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः हरे कृष्ण. So yesterday and today we did our first online presentation on humility part two. And I thought, since I'm in the mood, I would talk about it. And since many interesting things happened this weekend, many interesting realizations, I'm going to ask the devotees who attended either in person or online to share their realizations, and then we can discuss their realization, because the most beautiful part of the workshop today was the realizations of the devotees. They had many deep realizations. So we're going to need the microphone. While the devotees are thinking, I want to describe a few verses that tell us how difficult humility is. Once there was a Bengali devotee, and he heard about Mahaprabhu's mercy, and he thought, this is amazing, this is the movement I want to join. He was very happy and very excited. And then he read the third verse of Shishashtakam, Trinadapi Sunichena, one should be more humble than a blade of grass. That means one should feel oneself lower than everyone. Grass is the lowest. And one should be more tolerant than a tree, even if abused, one should be tolerant. And one should not want respect for oneself, which is, wow. And one should only want to give respect to others. When he read that verse, he said, forget it. I'm not joining. I can't do this. There are several verses in the Nardiya Purana which describe how difficult it is to develop humility. One verse describes how even those who have renounced everything, complete tyagis, the one thing that they're unable to renounce is their pride. And then it says, it goes further to say, but even if they're able to renounce their pride, they don't want to be glorified. If they're glorified, they like it. They relish it. So it's a very deep topic, a very difficult topic. And Vidura, I believe that Vidura told Duryodhan, or Krishna told Duryodhan. He said that you should be humble now. You should not fight the Pandavas. You should drink this very pungent, unintoxicating, bitter medicine called humility. So for the conditioned soul, humility can be bitter, because humility means to acknowledge who we are without any masks, without any pretension, to be aware of our faults, not hide them from ourselves or from others, to not always think oneself right, to not look for any kind of recognition. This is difficult, difficult stuff. So one of the things that came out of the workshop today is very interesting. Anything we do, we have two options. And they're not mutually exclusive. Sometimes they go on simultaneously. One option is, I do this solely for the pleasure of Krishna. One option is, I do it for the pleasure of my ego. I want recognition. And another option is a combination of both. I'm doing this for Krishna, but I want to be recognized. I would appreciate being recognized for this. So we, in the course, we ask devotees, have you ever done devotional service, even sadhana, even chanting japa? Have you ever done it with a desire, not purely motivated, although maybe the motivation is there, to do it purely, but have you ever done service with a motivation to be recognized? And 100% of the devotees said yes. In fact, some devotees say, I don't think I've ever done any service where I didn't want to be recognized in some way, appreciated, acknowledged. So that is a problem, because pure devotional service means I'm doing it solely for Krishna's pleasure. I'm not doing it for any ego pleasure. There's no sense of I will get something from it. And getting, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said something very, very heavy. He said that if a devotee desires or manipulates himself, positions himself in any way to get honor from other devotees, that is evil. Evil. Evil is a heavy word, isn't it? That's an evil. He said, that is an evil design. I've done something to position myself knowing that I will get honor for this. Consciously done that. He said, that is an evil manipulation. So, then Srila Prabhupada said, the doors to Vaikuntha open, the gates to Vaikuntha open through humility. For the humble devotee, that's what opens it. This is what sometimes I joke, that when you're going back to Godhead, there's a security gate, and they'll check. Actually, in Vaikuntha, there are 7 security gates, but they'll check. And humility must be there. And in fact, Prabhupada said, it's fundamental to bhakti. And in fact, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, bhakti is made of humility and compassion. That's what it is. In other words, without it, we don't have it. So we came up with a little phrase yesterday. Was it yesterday or today? Humility is the master key to bhakti. It's the foundation upon which the creeper of bhakti grows. That was the conclusion of 7 hours of this course. So, as I said, we're going to ask devotees who are at the course to share their realizations, and these realizations are very beautiful and powerful, and I thought, let us hear from them and let us discuss their realizations and see where it takes us. So, all you have to do is raise your hand. If you don't, I will call on you. I will raise Maternot's hand first. Over here.
The course was very, very enlivening because everyone was very much opening up and sharing vulnerably about what's really happening for them instead of what the mask is. And I could see one through one of the processes we did, one of the masks that I've been wearing is I'm trying to get love from others because I don't, and we're always then, Mahatma Prabhu says, why? Why are you trying to get that love? It's not, I'm
through,
trying to receive.
He said you're trying to get love through admiration.
Yes, trying to get love through admiration. Why am I trying to do that? And it's because I realize because I don't fully believe Krishna loves me. So I'm looking for that love elsewhere. And the pride is coming through, trying to receive love instead of understanding Krishna loves me. And I can reciprocate with that love. And then that's when I'll feel happy, satisfied.
So in other words, you're saying, I want acknowledgement from other people because I will feel that will make up for the appreciation that Krishna's already giving me. And I would also add the appreciation I'm not giving to myself.
Yeah, and the appreciation I'm not opening myself up and realizing that Krishna is giving me that love.
Yes.
Another thing that just kept ringing through me is I'm useless without Krishna, and I'm very useful with Krishna. But my pride, the ego is thinking I can do things separately from Krishna and is like keep trying again and again and again, and the results are always quite similar. They're disappointing, frustrating, and when I try to do things with Krishna, it's always an amazing, wonderful experience, and only through humility can I try to do things depending on Krishna. So that's another realization.
Yeah, so we have I did it, and we have Krishna did it. I did it, ahamkara. False ego, I did it. You ever do something and think, yeah, I did it. I'm the man, I'm the woman. That's false ego. And you do something, you succeed, and you say, thank you, Krishna. That's real ego. I am servant. So what's interesting is, if you write on a piece of paper, I am blank, and then after I am, you fill in whatever. I am American. I'm the man. I'm good at this, whatever. I'm strong. I'm smart. I'm like, every I am you fill in that other than I'm servant of Krishna, that's false ego. So if you want to know the difference between real ego and false ego, it's very simple. I am servant of Krishna, or I am fill in the blank. I am whatever. Sometimes I think of ahankara as identifying something as mine that belongs to Krishna. Whether it's a possession or a quality or a success. So if I say, this is mine, false ego, this is Krishna's. So I have some intelligence, I have some ability, I have something, and I say, this is Krishna's, real ego. Krishna gave it to me. False ego, I'm smart. I'm good at this. False ego. So the ego wants to take credit. We don't always want to give credit. Krishna, you can have some credit, but I want some also. Can we share it? So that we see with examples of Prabhupada, when he was glorified, he always gave credit to his Guru Maharaj, never to himself. Never thought for a moment. And one of the, that's my credit, one of the most beautiful things, I think, that came out of this course is something I learned from Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, but it became more clear as the course went on. If we look at our lives as conditioned souls, we can see how our ego is influenced by what's going on in our life. So if I'm not doing well, the ego goes down. If I'm doing well, the ego goes up. So if I'm not doing well, I'm failing. I think I'm a failure. I'm so bad. And if I'm doing well, then I think, oh, I'm smart. I'm great. I'm successful. I'm better than my neighbor. Our ego is very much influenced by what's happening, isn't it? And it's hard for a conditioned soul to be extremely successful and simultaneously humble. Because the more success, I just got a promotion, now I'm the head of the Jacksonville branch of Google. It's going to affect us, isn't it? Like, you know, and your neighbor is just like, he just drives a truck for Amazon. So it's like, loser. That's the conditioned response. As I succeed, I get more of a position. Maybe in ISKCON, I get a position. I'm on this bureau, that bureau. My ego, if I'm not Krishna conscious, it increases proportionally to what's going on outside of me. The most beautiful thing about humility is that never happens to a devotee who's humble. Whatever's going on outside does not influence his realization of who he is, because he never forgets, I am servant, that's all. So he can have 10, he can have 8 billion disciples. Every person on this planet becomes his disciple. And he will not be one iota different than when he was a brahmachari washing pots. I am a servant of Krishna washing pots. I am a servant of Krishna with 8 billion disciples. His ego is not affected by what's happening because he can't forget, I'm servant. And that's why you see with Prabhupada, he always said, I'm your servant. I may be your spiritual master by designation, but factually I'm your servant. It never made Prabhupada think, I'm not your servant because I'm your guru. I'm always your servant no matter what. And with us, no. The ego is up and down according to our successes or failures. Isn't it? Isn't that amazing? That's pure bhakti. So in other words, what's happening is when the ego goes up, we're forgetting I'm a humble servant of Krishna. And a pure devotee can never forget I'm a humble servant of Krishna no matter what happens. It also happens when things are bad. Sometimes when things are bad, we run away from Krishna and we forget I'm a servant of Krishna. When Prabhupada came to America, he had difficulties and none of his godbrothers encouraged him. And he said to his disciples, I was never discouraged. It was always, I'm just a servant of my Guru Maharaj. That's all. That's all that matters. Thank you for that. You have more?
One more thing relating to what you're saying. The last process we did today was an experiential process, a meditation you took us through, where we actually...
Don't tell them.
Okay.
You have to come, and you can come next week.
An amazing experiential process of being in your ego, being in the position of servant, and experiencing, feeling, seeing the difference, and feeling the value, the excitement, the joy of being a servant, and how depressing it is just being in everyday life, false ego in this world. So that was very far out. That was beautiful.
We also discussed something which is kind of depressing. Should I tell you? You already know this. I don't think it'll depress you. I'm only reminding you that the false ego is such that when we come to bhakti, sometimes we get very good at acting like a devotee more than being one. Acting like one to show others that I'm a good devotee. We get good at acting. And I ask the devotees, have you done this when you came to Krishna consciousness? Have you pretended to be more advanced than you are so you could show others that you're advanced, 100% said yes. That's sad that that we would do that, but that's what the false ego impels us to do. It's very important for us to be acknowledged. And the reason it's important for us to be acknowledged is that often we don't acknowledge ourselves. And sometimes we need someone else to say, you are smart, you are good, you did well, because we think, I'm not smart, I didn't do well, I'm not acknowledging myself. And you might think, isn't that false ego to acknowledge yourself? Well, it can be very encouraging if you do it in a healthy way. And if you don't do that, then you're going to want other people. You're going to be looking for it from other people. Why didn't you tell me that after this class is over, nobody told me it was a great class. I'm never giving a class again. What's wrong with you? It's like Trump once said, your approval ratings are low. And he said, yeah, people have no taste. Yeah, it's like that, you know. So, we are not meant to perform bhakti for applause, for recognition, for honor. We're meant to perform bhakti to please others. But so often, we doubt our own selves to the point where we need other people to acknowledge us. We're conditioned souls. Prabhupada did it. He encouraged us. But we don't want to perform. That's not what bhakti is about. Pure devotional service is just about pleasing Krishna. And Urmila said something. I don't know if I mentioned this. It was really funny. She said, sometimes you could be doing artik and you could be thinking, I wonder if the devotees like see how nicely I do artik. You know? She was saying, you're supposed to be thinking, I wonder if Krishna likes this. Not that my show is for the other devotees. So sometimes we get it backwards. I'm supposed to do this to please Krishna, but I'm wondering if the other devotees are noticing how well I'm doing it. That's not what pure bhakti is about. Thank you. Someone else want to share? In the back?
Just a few things came up in mind. One was when you were talking about no one patting us on the back. You know, I was a school teacher for several years with Montessori. And Dr. Montessori was big on not saying, oh, you did so well, that's so good. She would say, do you like it? Do you like what you have manifested here on the paper or whatever? And I think that, you know, we kind of, from the time a child is small, we almost train them to look for that recognition.
Yeah. Thank you. That's beautiful.
And then the class.
Well, one thing, I'll make a comment. One thing is we know if we're pleasing Guru and Krishna, we get reciprocation from them and we can feel. You know, we can feel that. And so if you feel it, you're satisfied. You don't need other people to tell you.
In class this morning, Srila Prabhupada gave class, and the main message in his class was just because someone is wearing tilak and Kunti Mala doesn't make them a devotee. And he said, do you know Krishna? That's what makes you a devotee, right? And he went on to say, you're either a devotee or a demon. There's only two. There's not a third, right? And I thought, wow. You know, and I think, okay, do I know Krishna? I know, you know, okay, I know that he's God, right? I know that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, right? And however, how often through the day do I forget that, you know, also? And so I thought, well, maybe I don't see myself as a, you know, 100%, you know, understanding Krishna consciousness, that kind of devotee, but I definitely don't want to see myself as a demon either. And so...
We're trying.
Yeah.
The Prabhupada often said, we're trying to be devotees. Yeah. Because when Prabhupada means devotee, he means pure devotee.
Yeah, that's right.
So sometimes he admonished devotees to call themselves devotees. He said, not devotee, trying. That's the humble attitude. And it's interesting because when we're pure devotees, we won't even think we're trying. We will think we're not. And Trinadapi Sunichena, it's so interesting. Because if I lack a taste for chanting, maybe that's why I'm not Trinadapi. Maybe it's my pride that's blocking the ability to taste. And maybe it's my pride that's causing me to make offenses. And to be more humble than a blade of grass, what it means is that the devotee thinks everyone is above me, which is, of course, for us inconceivable because the grass is, it's on the bottom and everyone is above me. That means at least for us, how could I feel I'm lower than everyone? That's a very high realization. But I can appreciate everyone. I can do that. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur made it very clear. He said, he was taking the example himself. He said, the reason I cannot see the good qualities in the devotees is because I lack the humility of a blade of grass. Because I put myself above some. If I put myself above some, then how am I looking? I'm looking from a higher position, so I'm looking down. So I'm not able to appreciate. And so he explained that that lack of ability to appreciate is coming from a lack of humility. So therefore, that lack of humility will cause fault finding. That's where it comes from. I don't know about you, but if I've ever found fault with someone or something, I've often thought, I'm insightful, like I'm smart. I can see the fault, like I have intuition, you know. It's like I have this quality that I'm able to see a fault where maybe you can't see it. There's like something wrong with you, you can't see it. It's actually the opposite, of course. But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta made it clear, when I'm seeing the fault as opposed to seeing the good, because I lack humility. And then another thing which is really interesting and scary, sorry if I scare you, but I think it'll be good to be scared by this. We'll say the good part first. If I appreciate a good quality in you, that quality is going to come back in me. Isn't that beautiful? What you appreciate, you know that saying, what you appreciate, appreciates? So what you appreciate in another, that quality becomes yours. It boomerangs. That's the value of appreciation, what I see the good in you. Because I get inspired by what I see good in you. And I want to be like that. I see you're so humble. You're so honest. You're so kind. I'm so not humble. I'm not honest. I'm not kind. I appreciate that in you. And I become inspired by that. And that your good quality starts to, by osmosis, come to me. Here's the bad news. I think you've guessed the bad news. If it works positively, it works negatively. So the fault, I didn't make this up. This is, I believe, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. The fault that I see in you, that becomes boomerang, and I get that fault myself. Hare Krishna. But the realization that I think is so important is to understand that nature to see the good or the nature to see the bad is either coming from a humble attitude or a proud attitude. So it's something to recognize. Yes?
I have a question.
Yes, yes.
In theory, it sounds very good, but in practical,
yes.
I look at Bhagavad Gita 11:33. Tasmat uttishtata jaso lavashya. Krishna actually giving credit to Arjuna. Hey, be glorious, enjoy the... He was literally bribing, I would say.
Yes.
Or encouraging him in a other way. And then at the end of the verse, he says, become my instrument. But become my instrument or act as a servant doesn't mean we lose our individual nourishment of emotion and other. That was not the case, I feel. Maybe I want you to correct me. When he saw his son on 14th day, Abhimanyu was killed. And he reacted, Arjuna reacted. Krishna was there. And he said, tomorrow before sunset, I'll kill Jayadratha or I'll throw myself. But was he not surrendered? Was he looking for his own emotional nourishment?
You know, okay. There's a couple of things we can say. I think one of the ways it becomes a little difficult to understand Arjuna's position is he's a Kshatriya, and we're trying to develop Brahminical qualities, so we can't always copy. You know, Prabhupada said he spoke to Arjuna to make him angry. So generally, Brahmins control their anger. And Kshatriya, and Prabhupada said if he wasn't angry, he wouldn't fight. So, I mean, not that a devotee doesn't get angry, but generally we see the anger manifested in more in the Kshatriyas. Let me tell you a story first and see if it helps. There was a man who questioned Prabhupada. He didn't question Prabhupada. He said to Prabhupada, Arjuna is not a pure devotee. This upset Prabhupada. Why do you say he's not a pure devotee? He said, because when his son was killed, he lamented. And if he was a pure devotee, why he would lament? And Prabhupada said, it's natural. If you lose your son, it's natural. And Prabhupada said, but he didn't stop fighting. So Prabhupada said, that's the distinction. The pure devotee, maybe he will be affected. Maybe you will offend me and I will be affected, but I'm not going to offend you back, even though I feel like it. That's my humility in practice. I'm not there yet, but at least I can practice it. Or you tell me, you know, you said something really bad in class. My immediate reaction is like, who are you to tell me? Right? So I don't react that way. And I say, okay, tell me. And I know in my heart I should listen to you because you're probably going to say something valuable and I should at least consider it. That's my practice of humility. Even though inside my ego is going, who are you to tell me? Do you know who I am? Do you know who you're talking to? Do you know what I've done? You know, that kind of thing. And so we're not talking about necessarily deep realization of humility, but we're talking about the ability to be able to practice it in spite of emotions going against it, which is basically what Prabhupada's saying Arjuna did. He was lamenting, he lost his son, but the proof that he's a pure devotee is he didn't allow that to affect him. And I think that's so beautiful because that's our position, isn't it? We're so affected, but we're not going to act on it. Just like, I believe it was Sri Dayananda Maharaj and Satsarup Maharaj, they took sannyas together. And at that initiation, Prabhupada said, it doesn't mean by taking sannyas, you're going to be free from lust and you're going to be free from desire for opulence. He said, but now you cannot act on it. In other words, acknowledging the desire is probably going to be there, but you've taken sannyas, so it's like, forget it. So they said, when you go to a wealthy man's house, you should not think, I also had a wife, I also had a home, and I've given it up, and now I'm lamenting, thinking, wonder if that was a good idea. He said, now that you've taken sannyas, you can no longer think that way, even though you feel that way, and you may feel that way. So we did all kinds of exercises to analyze how we can look at humility in action, perhaps in ways we've never discovered before. Just like, do you need to be right? When if I disagree with you, do you need to be right? No, I'm right. I'm right. I'm better than you. I know more than you. Do you become proud when you learn more, when you know more? Do you have difficulty cooperating? Do you have difficulty if someone gives you some feedback? I mean, you just go down the list. There's so many ways we can manifest pride that we may not even be aware of. Are you afraid to admit sometimes that you're proud about something? Do you hide that from yourself? So it's important to recognize these things so we can work on them. Then I think it's extremely important to understand how humility manifests. I mean, have we seen this scenario? Nice man gets married to a woman, and they're very humble with the devotees, but in that situation, not so humble. We've seen that so many times, right? Or we've seen a devotee, nice, humble devotee, he gets a position, and all of a sudden, he's like Godzilla now. It's like, he's a terror. You know, it's like, what happened to so-and-so? He was such a nice devotee. Well, he got a position. He thinks he's God now. And so that's the challenge, to be in situations where emotionally we feel in a way that we should not act on. I don't know if that's what you're asking, or were you asking like emotional fulfillment?
That helps, but I was also wondering, like at the end of that story, it's a long pastime, how Krishna actually maintained Arjuna's individual direction of his emotion towards his son, mm-hmm. and his vow that he will throw himself if he cannot kill. Yeah, yeah. Krishna did not dismiss it, but Krishna rather helped him indirectly and guided him, hey, without me you cannot do it.
Yeah, but Krishna wanted it. But if he didn't want it, he would have, right?
Yeah.
If it was wrong.
But it was not Krishna's desire that he has to follow blindly what Krishna wants.
Yeah.
We have individual way of pleasing Krishna. Krishna appreciates that.
Yes. Yes. Okay. If it's engaged in service, of course. Yes. Lilananda. Lilananda.
Lilananda. Hare Krishna. It has some relationship with what Pranav Govinda Prabhu was saying, which I thought was interesting. Like in the example you gave about Urmila, that someone is offering incense to the deities or doing some pujari service, and he thinks all the devotees are appreciating, or are they appreciating what I'm doing? But Krishna is never alone. When you're offering service to Krishna, Krishna is always with his associate. It's not that when we offer service, there's only Krishna there and nobody else is watching or appreciating what we are doing.
It wasn't actually appreciating. It was
I
more
didn't
like
get to
honor.
The question yet.
Okay.
The question is this desire for appreciation something that is just related to the ego, the false ego, or is a natural condition of the soul?
Well, let me clarify what she was saying. So we can clarify the difference between appreciation and wanting honor, because there is a distinction. So she was saying, I want to be recognized for doing this service, and I should want to please Krishna, but I want to please the devotees in a bad way. So I want devotees to be pleased with what I'm doing, so I will be recognized. That's what she meant. So it's not. We know that Prabhupada appreciated the devotees a lot, all the time, right? And we also know that human nature, appreciation, is a foundational need of human nature. But I think we need to make a distinction between appreciation and being honored. Because when I say honor or pride, I mean you want to put yourself above others. That's what pride means, like I'm better than you. That's a contamination. Trinada Pisunichina, I want to respect all the Vaishnavas. I want to see all the great qualities. And I'm not trying to outdo anyone, and I'm not trying to impress anyone that I'm better, smarter, more Krishna conscious, etc. than you. So pride puts you above others. If I want your appreciation, hopefully it's because I want to please you. I want to know you were pleased. So if you say, I appreciate this class, I'll think, oh, good, I was able to please you. Not that I think, oh, I can go home and tell everyone in the family, Leelananda, you know, he appreciated my class. And, you know, if I get appreciation from God, brother, it must have been a good class. And why don't you appreciate me also? You never appreciate me, you know. So that's a different thing. But if you say, oh, I liked your class, that was really good, then I think, oh, I should keep giving more classes like this. So I'm encouraged. And that's what Prabhupada did. But, as you may know, when Prabhupada found a devotee who was proud, he would cut them all the time. Even if they did good things, he would cut them down. You know that story? Guru Kripa, his party collected $108,000, came to Vrindavan, like a briefcase of money, you know, like in the movies, you know. And Prabhupada said, why only 108? Why not 110? He was like that with him. So sometimes Prabhupada may have felt the need to cut someone's ego down, who he felt who had a big ego. Most devotees Prabhupada appreciated. And when we got appreciated, then what do we do? It was like, great. I feel inspired to serve. If you appreciate another devotee and that devotee takes it in the right way, the devotee will be very inspired to serve. The devotee won't become proud by that appreciation. And I think I know where you're going with this. We want to please the devotees. For sure we want to please the devotees. But we don't want to please the devotees so they acknowledge us. That should not be our motive. Prabhu, come to my house. I'm going to serve you prasadam. Why? Because I want you to see how good a cook I am and glorify me. And tell everybody in Alatra what a great cook I am. That's different. No, I want you to come. I want to serve you. I want to please you. I like you. Yes? Okay. Krishna, Krishna, Hari Hari.
Is Krishna consciousness within you or without? Is it within or
without? It's definitely within, yeah. It's there. It's not you. There are things you can do outside of you that will ignite it, but it's already there. You're not igniting something that's not there.
Thank you.
So we have some over here. This side. When our spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, talked about Krishna consciousness, he would always say, this is not like some religion. He said, Krishna consciousness is there within you. It's just awakening a consciousness that you have. Yes?
Hi, Krishna Mahaprabhu. So nice to hear you speak. Earlier in the class, you were talking about how devotees sometimes, especially in the beginning, we might be performing bhakti or practices, sadhana, to impress the devotees around us. And in the ashram, I definitely experienced this within myself, like, I need to fit in, I need to, you know, prove that I can be part of, and I feel like there's some level of purity in that too. Like, yes, it's not a pure motivation, but Krishna pulls the purity out of that and helps us advance. However, I've seen a lot of my peers pull away from bhakti for that reason. They'll say something like, I felt like I wasn't doing it from my heart, and so now I just don't do it at all. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to know maybe if you had some thoughts about that.
One of the problems that we face in our movement is that it's so difficult to be Krishna conscious because we're highly conditioned. And if we don't realize that being highly conditioned is normal, that there are going to be difficulties and that everyone's experiencing it, then this can happen. But if they knew, they said, what you're going through, everyone's going through it. And these very advanced devotees you see, they all went through it also because it's normal. So oftentimes we become discouraged when we meet our humanness and we become discouraged. And to know that it's normal can really make a huge difference. No, you're just normal. Everything's fine. It's like you have an illness and you're healing and you're thinking you're supposed to be better and you're worried and you call the doctor. You say, doctor, it's been 3 weeks and I'm still coughing and this and that. And then he says, no, that's normal. It takes 7 weeks. And then you're relieved. Like, oh, okay. Yeah. For everyone, it takes 7 weeks. So I think that's extremely important. I have a story. This is a funny story, and it's a very valuable story. There was a devotee who used to be in our community. He was raised in Krishna consciousness. He had a very difficult life. His father was in and out of Krishna consciousness. And just let's say he had an extremely difficult life. And in his world, he just had a horrible childhood, and he had so many problems. So we were doing a workshop, and everyone was talking about all their problems. It was mostly adults there. Everyone was just being vulnerable, talking about their challenges. And during the whole workshop, he was a very angry person. He was very angry and just hard and cold. And when it came time for him to speak, he was one of the last persons who was going to speak about their problems. He was laughing, and nobody could understand. Why are you laughing? You've been so angry and serious this whole time. And he said, you guys are more messed up than I am. And what I have found from facilitating workshops, one of the most valuable things in facilitating a workshop is letting people speak in a safe environment about their challenges. So, and when everyone hears it, everyone starts thinking, oh, I thought I was the only one that had that problem. Misery loves company. It's a relief to know that. We did, in Alachua, maybe 15, 12 years ago, we did a workshop on sexual purity for men. And the main comment the men gave was, I'm glad to know I'm not the only one. I thought I was the only one. So whenever you have a problem, like ego. One devotee went to one of Prabhupada's godbrothers and he said, I have trouble following the four regular principles. He goes, that's not a problem. He says, I'm smoking marijuana. Not a problem. The problem is your false ego. That's the problem. If you want to worry about something, worry about that. So we all have a false ego, and it's a problem, and we're all dealing with it, and we're all highly conditioned. So I think that's extremely important. And to know, no, that's normal. You're having problems. Totally normal. Stay on the boat. Don't jump off. You'll get there. And it's okay. You don't have to hate yourself. You don't have to give up. Of course, Maya's going to say, give up. You can't do this. Right? Is that okay? Yeah. Someone else? Yes.
My biggest takeaway from the workshop was I feel the closest when I'm humble. I'm feeling closest to Krishna when I'm humble.
Closer to Krishna when you're humble.
Yes, and then also the distinguish you made between false pride and healthy pride.
Yes.
When it's healthy, it's like, yes, we did it. Thank you, Krishna.
Yes.
And false pride is like, I did it. I need recognition. I want this. And kind of don't have Krishna in the picture.
Yes.
So it's such a beautiful reminder that whatever I achieve in life, to always thank Krishna and remember, yes, I'm your servant. It's all because of you, because you're empowering me. So that's kind of my takeaway.
Yeah, and we need healthy pride, because healthy pride gives confidence. So have you ever done something and just went, wow, I didn't know I could do that? You ever done that? Yes, exactly. Like, I couldn't do this on my own, but I did it. And I'm proud of myself for having the courage to do it. And I know Krishna helped me. So that's a healthy form of pride. That form of pride doesn't make you feel better. It makes you feel smaller because you know Krishna did it. The unhealthy pride makes you feel better because it's false ego. I did it. Right? Yes. Yes. Hare Krishna. The last one. I mean, you can all leave at 6 o'clock, whatever.
Hare Krishna Prabhu. Thank you so much for a wonderful class. My question is related to something you mentioned even in your video, one of the videos, related to humility. So you mentioned appreciation. So sometimes, okay, appreciation, if there is there, but without honor, is good. But you mentioned something about self-motivation. Like, I am servant of Krishna. To be there is, it's only possible for pure devotees. But someone who's getting there, who's not there yet, they need some appreciation and they need that self-motivation. So how to get that self-motivation to stay at that level
you can,
or get to that level?
What I was saying before, and we don't hear this that much, but sometimes we have to appreciate ourselves and say, you know, maybe this class wasn't good. And everyone says, eh, you could do better than that. You know? And I'm thinking, I tried my best. And so I can if I feel I've tried my best to serve Srila Prabhupada and serve you, that's a kind of self-appreciation that motivates me to go on. Okay, I can do better. I'm sure I can do better. But I'm trying, and I don't want to give up. And if I'm dependent on others' appreciation, maybe I'll give up if no one appreciates me. So now I'm not self-reliant. I can't motivate myself. I'm very dependent on others, and if I don't get that encouragement from others, I give up. So that's not a healthy state to be in, because now I'm allowing other people to control me by their opinions of me. But if I'm sincere and I'm trying to do it for the right reason, why shouldn't I be encouraged? And will I get better at it? If I keep doing it, I will. If I stop doing it, I won't. If I allow others to... You know, Havi told me something really interesting. I don't know the psychology behind this. He said every song that he produced, if half the record company hated it and half of them loved it, it was always a hit. But if all of them loved it, it wasn't. Oh, he has a better story. Oh, this is a great story. I hope he doesn't mind I tell it. It's glorifying him. I knew Havi when he was brahmachari, and we used to go out and do kirtan, and then, you know, he always said, you know, I think I could, like, make it in the music industry, and so he tried and he did it. And the way he did it was, there was a mountain in Venezuela, I think it's called Green Mountain. Anyone from Venezuela here? Yeah. So he decided to write a song about that mountain. Is that it? Yeah. Back whenever it was, 82, I don't know, he decided to write a song about this mountain. And he was convinced this is going to be good. So he wrote to one of the most popular, if not the most popular singers in Venezuela and said, what do you think about writing a song about this mountain? And the guy said, who wants to hear a song about a mountain? And so this was like one of the biggest guys, totally discouraged him, and he went and wrote the song, and that was how he became famous. It was like a number one hit. So sometimes intuitively you feel something's going to be good and everyone's going to tell you, no, don't do it. And you're the only one who's encouraging yourself. The Wright brothers, when they decided we're going to fly, everybody said, you're crazy. And in fact, most of the time when someone wants to do something that's never been done, people say, you're crazy, it can't be done. But they had a mission. And so they did it. And they said the same thing to Prabhupada. You're not going to be successful in America. Nobody's going to take it. So I think it's extremely important that if you feel something is right and you can tell yourself, this is good, I did my best, I can do better, then you're going to be successful. And if you depend on others, what if others don't think it's a good idea? But it is. Then what do? It's really bad to be controlled by what others think of you. I mean, of course, we want devotees to appreciate us. That's, you know, we want to please the devotees and all that. But sometimes you have to step out of the box and just do it.
So that sometimes we think appreciation is like reciprocation from Krishna. But I think what you're saying is our intuition is also reciprocation from Krishna.
The feeling that, you tried your best. Keep going. Good job, Prabhu. Big hug, you know. Keep going, you know, if this is where your inspiration is and you have a vision for service, just do it no matter what anybody says. Or if anybody says no, take it as a sign. Yeah, that means I should try harder. Yeah, like that.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you for listening. If you want to come, where do they go? To the website?
There's posters here and here. They can come if you're a person, they can come.
Yeah, there's posters. I can't advertise and say I would recommend it because I'm the one giving it, but I just said it anyway. I think it's really worth spending three and a half hours, 2 days. I think you'll learn a lot. We do lots of exercises that really will help you. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Go Premanandi Hari Hari Bol.